This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Cam Quarles, CEO of the National Potato Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with the Potato Council's Cam Quarles next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. A record number of members of the potato industry will gather this week for the 2024 Potato Expo in Austin, Texas. National Potato Council CEO Cam Quarles says this industry has a tremendous economic impact on the nation.
The potato industry, when you look at all of the activities that happen at the farm gate, it's about a $10 billion industry when you're considering all the economic impacts that spin out to folks at and around the farm gate. But then when you walk up the supply chain, as you're gathering up those processors, exporters, suppliers, once you calculate all of those benefits, you're talking about $100 billion a year that's injected into the U.S. economy based on the activities that begin on U.S. potato growers, family farms all around the country. And so our event every year in January has been growing and growing. This one looks like the largest ever. And you really see every side of this very, very vibrant industry when you're under that roof. This year going to be in Austin.
Could you summarize, if you will, some of the various headwinds that are pressing against the industry overall and certainly growers?
We are in a fortunate position that demand for potatoes overall, globally, as well as domestically in the United States, has been growing over time. That is a unique position. A lot of our specialty crop colleagues are in a different spot. Potatoes are fortunate there. However, headwinds that we're facing, certainly nutrition policy, dietary guidelines, how those are addressed, how potatoes are considered into the future by the federal government, trade issues. Those involve, can we access valuable markets overseas? And we've got issues with markets that may send us product that unfortunately may have a phytosanitary issue, a pest or a disease that if it gets into U.S. production would cause huge chaos. Those are substantial headwinds, really concern growers. And then, of course, in inflation. Do you have access to the inputs necessary to get your crop in the ground? Can you get your crop out of the ground, and can you sell it at a reasonable price? Those are all things that I think every grower wants to know about. And certainly, the timing of our event and here at the beginning of the year, it's a great forum for everybody to explore those questions.
So, domestic or global, which side of the demand equation is bigger for the U.S. grower?
Our rule of thumb, Jeff, is that 20% of all potatoes have to find a home in foreign markets in some form. And now that could be processed product, or it could be fresh product. And you and I have talked before about a lot of our battles getting fresh product into Mexico. We're currently engaged in a similar effort in Japan. And then you have a lot of, on the process side of things, you have a lot of tariff related issues, those kinds of things that may hold you back from export markets. So you can kind of see the relative value of global versus domestic. Clearly we make our money here at home for 80% of the crop, but about 20% has got to find valuable foreign markets.
How is this domestic market evolving? especially since the COVID pandemic.
One of the things that really shocked everyone was when, you know, the access to our markets domestically, it was a little bit like oxygen. You really don't think about it until you don't have it anymore. And when we were shocked under COVID, it really brought to light how stovepiped a lot of our markets are. The ability to shift from the processed side of the house or the institutional side of the house that may serve hotels and cruise ships and those type of activities, it was really tough to jump from those markets, which were closed, to the ones that were open and were screaming demand, like grocery stores selling at retail. Similarly, getting your inputs to the farm at a time of crisis. Those I think it really shocked everyone how difficult it was to be able to be nimble and flexible. And those questions I think are still being asked today. It's difficult to plan for a once every century event, but I think there's been a real questioning as to how if it serves us well to be that rigidly stovepiped into the future, if there's a little bit more flexibility that can be built into the system.
So what to eat and what to avoid are big topics today. And then there is the government and how they try to guide the consumer influence. So where is the debate today and public opinion, and where is this question being addressed in Washington?
We are right now in the throes of something that happens every 5 years. It's called the Dietary Guidelines for Americans process, a joint effort between the Departments of Health and Human Services and the Department of Agriculture. And it's to lay out exactly answers to exactly that question you asked, Jeff, is what is the federal government recommending consumers' plates? What should they look like? And once they settle on those dietary guidelines, these would last from 2025 through 2030. Those guidelines would then form a foundation of nutrition policy that would cascade through a number of different federal programs. It's not just advice to consumers. It would flow down to school lunch, school breakfast, a lot of those federal feeding programs. So really fundamental, important questions. And it is a massive process that you see every side of agriculture and food industry, a lot of activist groups, they all pile in there trying to get their voice heard and influence policy in some manner.
So there's the question of the tomato. Is it a vegetable? Is it a fruit? And then you've got the situation of asking, is a potato actually a vegetable, or should it be classified with grains because it of its starch content?
Yeah, I got to say, Jeff, this is one of the more bizarre situations that I've seen in my 20-plus years of working in specialty crops. So if you talk to any scientific expert, horticulturalist, botanist, there's not any debate that potato is vegetable. That discussion has ended, and I think it ended about a century ago. The question that the Dietary Guidelines Committee is asking is basically, what do people substitute a potato for on the plate? And they've zeroed in on it's often a potato or a grain, as you mentioned, like rice. And somehow they've made a jump to, well, then maybe we should call a potato, scientifically a vegetable, something else. And I've made kind of the absurd comparison. I've said, well, what if we were substituted for a glass of milk? Would you consider a potato to be in the dairy program? That makes kind of crowdsourcing these decisions is, I don't think it informs consumers, doesn't help anybody. You're just going with sort of popular trends rather than having a factual discussion about the commodities that are on the plate. You can discuss the forms that they're in. You can discuss nutrient content, all those kinds of things. But to sit there and say that a potato is not a vegetable because you might discard it for and put something else on your plate. It just seems utterly bizarre and somewhat of a creature of this post-factual world a lot of us find ourselves in with social media and all these other kinds of things.
So are French fries giving you a bad name and running past all the other positive, nutritive elements of the potato?
Well, we try to take these things back to let's have an empirical discussion. What is the form of the potato that ends up on the plate? And what's the nutrient content in that form? Those type of discussions, that you have an empirical set of information that you can consider. Potatoes very high in potassium, high in a variety of different nutrients that underserved folks need. But if you roll this back 10 years or so ago and in a prior administration, folks said, we're not going to consider what form a potato is in. We just want them all out of the school lunch and school breakfast programs. We considered that to be bizarre. A potato coming out of the ground is loaded with nutrients at a very, very low cost. And so the return on investment for potatoes was fantastic in the specialty crop space. That got very convoluted again, sort of in this post-factual world. And we struggle to have these conversations over empirical data. It gets more into a conversation of people's emotions and opinions, and that just goes down a rabbit hole that doesn't end well for anybody.
So from a nutritive value, what do consumers miss if they start avoiding potatoes?
Well, in the specialty crop space, in the vegetable space, the calories that a potato delivers, and they are technically classified as a starchy vegetable, the nutrients and the calories that a potato delivers cannot be matched by anything else in that category. It's you have a lot of, I mentioned potassium, vitamin C. Potatoes are loaded when they come out of the ground. They are loaded with these nutrients at a very, very cheap price. That's why the school food service professionals were so horrified at the possibility that they would have those potatoes, which are also highly flexible, a number of different ways you can deliver potatoes to a plate. Those nutritionists were absolutely horrified that they were going to have to assemble school meals and take the most flexible, low-cost, efficient commodity they've got in the vegetable space out of their toolkit. That was a terrible, terrible idea. I think we obviously want to continue where there's good scientific reasons why we should continue in that to play a very prominent role in that vegetable category for all of these federal programs. But I'm not going to sleep on what the federal government, there's a lot of ideas in Washington, Jeff, and some of them are good. And I think that this idea to reclassify potatoes is not one of the good ones. It's sort of in the comically absurd and yet painfully terrible if it actually comes to fruition.
So in 24, on the wish list for lots of commodity organizations is to have a new farm bill. You're a part of the Specialty Crop Alliance. What's on the wish list for this policy as we look to leaders and see when they actually take up this mark?
I'll just very briefly mention how important the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance has been to the fruit and vegetable industry in the United States writ large. Roll it back 20 years ago, specialty crops, which are about half of farm gate value in the U.S., were not players in any material way in a farm bill. And it was just, that was kind of an odd situation. Some of that was very much self-inflicted. The Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance has allowed big geographically diverse producers like the potato industry to combine with our colleagues in in California and Florida and other places that may be growing smaller commodities but are very important around a core set of priorities that will deliver major value to these incredibly important producers. Research is a huge issue for specialty crops. Crop insurance, typically we have lagged behind in the delivery of beneficial crop insurance products to specialty crops. They've just been a different kind of commodity. We obviously, as things become more challenging in the ag labor space, it's driving folks to try to figure how can we make our existing workforce operate more efficiently? And that is in part going to be helped through beneficial mechanization, AI, automation, all of those kinds of things on farm, near farm, assuming that our ag workforce just doesn't get a whole lot bigger, given the challenges that we have with Congress getting out of its own way on labor reform. Those are a few of the things that matter to us, but I'll tell you the biggest one, Jeff. We cannot go into a farm bill extension scenario like we've seen with other big federal policies like the highway bill, the transportation bill that just get extended for a decade or better in little fits and starts. We do not want to be looking back in 2034 using the tools of the 2018 farm bill to address those future battles that we have with pests, diseases, research issues, or with foreign governments and export markets. That is a recipe for disaster for a tremendous industry.
Is it price caps, or what are elements of crop insurance that should be improved to help specialty crop growers?
It's a multi-tiered question. I will just say that the current products that are out there, Jeff, often they are expensive. The return on investment for growers in many cases hasn't been there. In some cases it has been, but in many cases it hasn't. I think what we're looking at is trying to figure out how can you deliver products that, you know, a number of these farms may not be single commodity producers. They have a variety of things under their banner. And can you create valuable whole farm products that will advance those farms at a reasonable price? And some of that burden clearly is going to transfer to the federal government, because you are talking about more high cost operations than you would see in some of our program crop colleagues' space. Specialty crops, it's a great thing about them is they're very high value commodities. They're also very costly to produce. And so the margins are tight, but the numbers are very big, and it makes it difficult for the actuaries to make all those boxes line up.
One of the big items that will take place this week is that the U.S. Chief Ag Negotiator will be a part of your meeting in Austin. And I would suggest on the table is access to a market, per se Japan, and then concern about imports, per se Prince Edward.
We're very excited to have Ambassador Doug McCaleb joining us in Austin. It's a terrific opportunity for our attendees to hear from one of the key individuals in the Biden administration about what they're doing on trade policy writ large. And then you mentioned we've had this challenges getting into Japan for fresh potatoes. USTR has a huge role to play there in breaking past what is not really a technical issue. It's purely a political issue. To roll it all the way back, this request first went in over 25 years ago, before I was ever in the industry, and we're still trying to advance the ball just 1 yard down the playing field. It hasn't moved much more than that in over two decades. You mentioned Prince Edward Island. Huge challenges that for folks who may not be aware, Prince Edward Island has one of the most destructive diseases in potatoes, and they have dealt with a series over the years of these kind of episodes where the disease gets out, it moves around, they try to get their arms around it and get back to shipping. And the U.S. is an important market for Prince Edward Island. We're very accepting of their potatoes. What we do not want is a horrible disease that the U.S. does not have riding on those potatoes. And so we're going to be talking with not only USTR, but obviously USDA has a huge impact on whether or not those risks can be mitigated. But all of these things that we've talked about, Jeff, if you get a destructive disease like that into U.S. production, a lot of the issues that we have considered will go right off the table in the matter of hours as export markets and domestic markets slam shut. It is a multi-billion dollar threat to the U.S. industry, and we do not want to see that go wrong.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks for taking time for being a part of this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, and today you've got the last word.
Well, Jeff, just first to thank you. I really enjoy every time we have an opportunity to talk. It's great. I would say that getting back to potatoes as a vegetable and certainly the broader specialty crop industry, it's an honor. It's a privilege for me to be able to represent this incredibly vibrant industry. We talked about how diverse it is geographically, all of the different ways that you can prepare and deliver potatoes. Again, America's most consumed vegetable, which is kind of fun to be a part of. And we want to keep that happening. We want to keep that drumbeat going. And the federal government has such an important role to play in all of those things. What are they recommending people consume? Where can they consume it? Well, then that gets to environmental policy. It gets to crop protection tools, pesticide policy. It gets to, can we open foreign markets? Can we make sure that diseases don't run rampant in the United States, which may close not only international trade, but also interstate trade? The federal government, partnered with the states and obviously a very vibrant industry, has a tremendous amount to say about all of those things. And a lot of that gets reflected in a farm bill. The reason that the farm bill has so many titles is reflective of the diversity of all of these issues facing American agriculture, the specialty crop industry, and certainly the potato industry. And it's so important to make sure that farm policy keeps pace with a very, very competitive, vibrant, and ever-changing industry. Again, we cannot get into a cycle where we're fighting the battles of 10 years in the future with the tools of 10 or 20 years in the past. That will be a path to destruction for U.S. agriculture and certainly specialty crops. We're going to do everything that we can to deliver a new farm bill to growers. A lot of that is not necessarily under our control, but we're certainly going to put our shoulder to the wheel with all of our specialty crop colleagues and certainly the larger U.S. agriculture industry to try to get that across the finish line, along with all of our other very important priorities in the appropriation space and all these other things. When you look at the complexity of all of these federal policies, it's really kind of staggering. But when you get a win, when you deliver on some of these promises to growers and certainly to the larger U.S. economy, it's really, really gratifying. And I think that's what keeps us coming back every day, right, Jeff?
Our thanks to Cam Quarles, CEO of the National Potato Council, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.